Oh man,
how's the mouse?
It was good, man. It was surprisingly good. We thought it was going to be really sucky weather. Like, we thought the rain was going to come in, but it kind of stopped before we got there and then came after we left. So yeah, it was good weather. It worked out pretty good. And
nice.
You know, we had a giant crew, but everybody kind of, like, you kind of did some stuff with some people at some point, split, came back. Like, nobody was overly burdened. Like, it worked out surprisingly well. Like, surprisingly well.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it to go as well as it did. So, but I'll take it.
Absolutely.
I'm exhausted though, man. Like,
that's fair. When'd you get back?
We got back on Thursday night. So Thursday day, whatever. But okay. Just like the recoup, man. Like, I think I slept in until like 9 or 10 o'clock on Sunday. I was just like, I can't function. Cause we went right back to work on Friday too. So it was just, that's the benefit of working from home, benefit and downside to working from home. Because, like, if I was going into the office, I would have taken an extra day off.
Sure.
Right? Because I'm working from home, I was like, oh, I can roll out of bed and go to work. But...
And it's true, you can.
Can, yeah. Yeah, I didn't enjoy it none, though, that's for sure. But, I mean, I don't say that about work all too often anyway, so...
Fair.
You know. Oh, well. How about you, man? How have things been?
Oh, they've been good. Yeah. Let's see... I'm on spring break this week, so that part's nice.
Nice.
Diving in heavy duty on some master's work, trying to get a little bit ahead in the reading and that kind of stuff. The paper writing, I don't know in advance what the topics are going to be for the papers, but I can at least see what the reading requirements are going to be and try and jump out on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good call. Well,
then
done.
I'm gonna take a day and just like head up north a little bit just to get out so that I don't want to live in my apartment too much for the week off.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good idea too. Get some nature, some decompression. Mm-hmm. Shoot, reading your books in different scenery is nice too sometimes, you know? Like,
also really true, yeah.
So yeah, I highly encourage that. That'd be good. Cool. Very cool. All right. Let's hit an intro and jump into it.
Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation.
All right, you had anything good lately?
You know, so I am still, I really haven't been doing a whole lot of beer and such lately. I have been sticking kind of to the sipping whiskeys and stuff like that when I'm working. And so, yeah, I mean, it's been good, but nothing super, nothing new. Like, I don't, you know, when you think about how long it takes us after we get like a sampler pack of beers, how long we're still working through that sampler pack.
To work through it,
I move slower than that through a bottle of scotch.
Yes.
So.
Yes. That's probably for your own health. I am glad that you do.
for financial and physical health. It is really the right way to go to stretch these a bit. But yeah.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, I've actually had, so I had a couple in California. I just can't remember what any of them are. And so it doesn't.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, it doesn't help none. I mean, the one I remember is we had, so I know I had a stout with some barbecue and it was good. Or an amber with barbecue and a stout with some maple bacon donuts, which was good.
Ooh.
Yeah, for dessert. Yeah, that was a cool combo. I just don't remember who made the stout. It was good, though. It was tasty. But the ones I remember is, so when we do California Adventure, that's like the park that I enjoy the most. It's a little more spread out. You know, it's a little more adult-oriented. There's still a lot of stuff for kids, but there's more stuff for adults there.
Yeah.
And so we always end up with the pizza and beer. I think I've said this before. And so this time around they had the Hazy Sculpin from Ballast Point, right? Which is Ballast Point is super good. And then Carl Strauss is one of the big sponsors, or that's basically the beer at California Venture. So they're you know, like they have a big stand in San Francisco, and you know, like they're kind of everywhere. And so they had also an IPA because for some reason that's all they serve there. And then it was, you know, you could get Carl Strauss IPA or like the mango cart wheat beer, whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
gotcha.
I'm like, man, I'm not.
Yeah, no.
So I ended up with two IPAs, but they were both super good. Carl Strauss is a great brewery. They make really good stuff. Have you had them yet?
I have not, actually. I was just gonna say I don't think I have, at least.
So like the one they're really known for is the Red Trolley.
Mm.
Red Trolley. Yeah, I think it's a red. That's, you know, that makes a lot of sense. But they won some
that tracks.
They won some medals or something around that, and then they kind of blew up after that. And I don't know if you can get them outside of California right now. I'm sure you can. Probably up like the northern states. I don't think it's in Arizona though.
Gotcha.
If I see one, I'll grab one. But the Red Trolley is really good. They're solid, man. Yeah, I enjoy them a lot.
Excellent. Glad to hear.
Yeah, it was not bad. Not bad at all. Alrighty, so we are wrapping up because there's only three. So like our mini series is very set before we even went into it. So we're talking the third temptation of Christ, mm-hmm. right? And this is the one, and I'll let you kind of maybe like break it down here for us a little bit. But this is the one where, you know, like I was really thinking about all the order and disordered life and how the temptations seem to like pull us towards disorder, and Christ was demonstrating properly ordered. But the third one I feel like is the one that didn't really fit that mold as well. And so like, I'm interested to see if I'm able to stretch that a bit, or maybe it does and I just couldn't see it. But that was one that I wasn't sure if it fit that whole like properly ordered life motif I've been working.
Sure. With. Fair enough. Well, I think it still does. Primarily from the perspective of, you know, that idea of personal integrity and the idea of that relationship between word and belief, you know, what we say versus what we actually think and what we actually believe. And here's kind of my reasoning on that. When we look at Satan tempting Jesus in this third temptation, Jesus is taken to like a mountaintop and able to see all the kingdoms of the earth and all this. And Satan says, all of these have been given into my power. Bow down and worship me and I shall give them all to you. And, you know, like we've seen in the past, there is something to this in the idea that, yeah, that is what Jesus came to do, is to lead, guide, and rule humanity. And so, like, this kingship of Christ is one of the key aspects of his mission. And so, yeah, this would be a shortcut for it. But, like, really, again, that's probably not actually a temptation. Like, I don't think even Satan probably anticipates that if Christ were to bow down and worship him there, it would be an actual, you know, overturning of heaven completely and totally, where Christ has decided, oh, well, yeah, this political power is totally worth throwing in my lot with Satan now instead. You know, like, that's probably not there. If anything, to me, it is more that idea of, oh, shoot, say it. You don't have to mean it. You know, like the gesture, taking a posture of worship without any sincerity in heart, like that to me would seem more tempting. Like, okay, cool. You're like, so all I got to do, bow down, say a couple things to you, and then I'm the one in charge, and so I can just go ahead and get right back to my mission after that. And I'm reminded of there's a great film on St. Thomas More's life called Man for All Seasons. And if you haven't seen it, it's totally great and well worth watching. But basically, you know, so it's King Henry VIII has broken away or is breaking away from the Catholic Church because they won't grant him an annulment from his wife so that he can marry somebody else to try and have a son because he doesn't have an heir and blah, 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 and all this. And Thomas More has been like one of his kind of close friends and has been a confidant. But when the time comes where he is declaring separation from Rome, he basically everyone is ordered to sign this paper saying that they acknowledge the king as the head of the church. And Thomas More is one of the few who like will not, ends up in prison and all of this kind of stuff. He goes from being super high up in the government and in a very trusted position to being in prison. And one day his daughter is like brought into the prison specifically to try and like break him because like the king doesn't actually want him to be put to death or anything like that. He has a really strong reputation. So his daughter comes in and basically makes that same argument of, you know, Dad, why not just say, like, maintain your integrity in your heart, knowing that you acknowledge the Pope as the head of the church and all of this, and that you don't actually believe King Henry, but like, go ahead and just sign it. It can't be worth all this. And his statement is essentially this idea that like, your integrity is like water held in the cup of your hands. Once you separate the fingers ever so slightly, it all pours out.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, to me, that's kind of where I see this is this idea of, you know, Christ could have, and we are often tempted to, like, how often do we find ourselves in a situation where it's like, no, look, I know this is wrong, but if I do this for like a second, I don't have to mean it. I don't have to commit to it, but I'm going to go along with this idea for now. And it's going to be worth it when I bring it all back around later. And it is this, ultimately, a lack of trust in God whose mission we're trying to fulfill. Like, we've been told that if God is going to ask us to do something, he will make it possible for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to keep moving forward. But those times where we find ourselves really tempted to be like, you know what? I don't think I can wait on you for this one, God. I'm going to do this my way instead. And so that lack of trust, that lack of confidence, and that willingness to undersell the importance of our worship, you know, because that worship, that outward expression of our praise and of our worship, it is actually meaningful. You know, C.S. Lewis talks about that idea in Screwtape Letters. Like, there's a brief back and forth between Screwtape and Wormwood talking about the importance of our posture for us human beings in prayer and things like that, you know, and trying to separate for us, trying to get us to view ourselves as either bodies or as spirits and not to think about the fact that, no, they're actually aligned. And so what I do with my body aligns my spirit either to God or away from him, or the things that I think and that I choose to put my internal attention towards, even if I am one of the, you know, Leighton always talked about the frozen chosen, you know, I'm one of the people who goes to church every Sunday, but like while I'm there, you know, going through the motions, interiorly, where am I at? I'm at the football game that I would rather be watching instead, and those kinds of things, that it affects everything. That we are, like, that idea of integrity is that we are integrated.
Mm-hmm.
My thoughts, my words, my actions, they all are part of this one consistent whole. And so if even intending good, and if even intending, like, ultimately a deception to those who are like trying to tempt me. If I align myself to that in one part, it affects it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's interesting. So I have a couple of thoughts and I'm just going to spew them all out here.
Do it.
So the first one is that one, how disconcerting is it that Satan fully acknowledges and Christ doesn't argue that all of the governments belong to Satan? Like, I was just sitting there going like, dang. Okay. Well, that sucks. But on from that, the really interesting part that you said there was the, like in my brain, I was using kind of like creating a false dichotomy or like kind of like not a dichotomy, but kind of splitting a wedge between body and spirit and being integrated, and how if you can just, even if you don't split the two completely, you know, like I think about what was the stupid C.S. Lewis knockoff with the Earth and the polar bear.
The Golden Compass.
Yeah. You know, like they were separating basically spirit and yada, yada. But like if you could just create a wedge between those two where you could say, hey, I can do something with my body that doesn't impact my spirit. I mean, every pubescent Christian has said, oh, I can do this with my body and it won't infect my spirit because I can go to, you know, like that's not how it works. But like, if you can just create that idea, the wedge that like an axe, I'm thinking of wood, and like as it moves forward and it splits it farther and farther apart, you end up a long ways from where you should be. And then again, the last thought where I'm pulling this all together is, how many times have you heard the argument, you know, like, well, think of how much good you can do over here, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a big argument with, I can't say his name, Stephen Futrick or whatever, and the Southern Baptists, right? So he's a mega church pastor, right? And he just separated from the Southern Baptist Convention. And so like they had a big argument, and his thing was, is like, look, I'm baptizing like 2,000 people a month or something like that. And they're like, yeah, but at what cost? Like you've let your theology and all of these things slide, and you're saying that you're reaching all these people for good, but like, what's the cost? And so there's this interesting, that again, there's this little wedge that just kind of pushes a sliver that says, I can reach, if I compromise on this small piece of my integrity, I can reach 10,000 people for Christ, right? Like, and it's seems like it's a good thing. And I'm not saying that, you know, all those people are not saved. Like, I'm not judging.
No, certainly,
you know, God's a judge there. But there is, we know there's problems with the mega church pastors, right? Like, we know there's lots of issues that come into anything that gets too big. But you see that they kind of, there's a little wedge and they say, oh, I can do all this good. And they do this mass thing, but you had to compromise like reason, integrity, and these things. And then now, rather than doing the hard work, because if you had stuck to your integrity, you wouldn't have reached all those people. The reality is.
Well, and so like that's the, I'm going to go ahead and continue with this theme of just like shotgunning thoughts out, but in kind of response. So like the first one, talking about like all the governments being under Satan's control. Again, he is the father of lies, so I'm not going to take him too seriously on it.
Fair.
But like the idea that they are under his influence, because like God's not willing to take away our free will, and Satan absolutely is. And so, he will attempt to like dominate and manipulate where God wouldn't. And so there is some influence from him there.
That's fair.
And that's an important thing to keep in mind.
That's a good out.
Like just a reality. But like the, as far as like the integration of either body and soul, or of like orthodoxy and orthopraxy, like the idea of practice and teaching being so closely related, I think one of the big things is to remember whose mission is it. And what I mean by that is that like, so in my own personal life, just looking at, again, like you were saying, some of those bodily sins, Mm-hmm. You know, whether we're talking about overindulgence in alcohol, drug abuse, whether we're talking about pornography, sex outside of marriage, any of that kind of stuff, these like very bodily, carnal sins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, if I were a Gnostic and if I believed that the flesh was in some way some kind of like a prison for my soul as opposed to part of God's intentional design, then there would be some meaning to that. But the problem is my body is not an additional thing. My body is who I am. Like, not exclusively, like not that my body and then my soul is this extra thing, but like who I am is both body and soul. From the beginning, when God like willed me into existence, he did so as body and soul. This is why we talk about like that idea even of the resurrection of the body and life mm-hmm. everlasting. Like even at the end of time, the glorified body, we become like Christ. And so like, I don't know exactly what that will be like, but my body is still ultimately, it feels a little dangerous to call it my body. Like it's my body in the sense that it is the body, which is me,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't make it. I don't own it. I don't ultimately decide what is good for it and what isn't. I've been entrusted with it. Yeah, I decide what I'm going to do with it. Absolutely.
Stewarded of it. Yeah.
But like, yeah, steward, because like what I do with it, cool. I have decided that ice cream is delicious. And so I will make ice cream my 3 square meals a day. Okay. Yeah. No, cool. I am free to do that. I'm going to die soon.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's my body, in spite of my will for it, it doesn't change what's actually beneficial for it. And we see that, I think, as well with like the idea of orthodoxy and orthopraxy on that larger scale, is this idea of if I am going to change, there are things that I can change about the way I do things without it being harmful. Because some things about the way that I worship are human decisions and human images and human manufactured ways of doing things. And so those things are, to borrow C.S. Lewis when he's talking about everything when he writes it in his books, if you find this helpful, awesome, keep it. If not, trash it. Mm-hmm. Don't need it anymore. Like, yeah, there are some human elements of it. And so those I'm able to adjust because they are a human invention. And so as a human, I have the authority to change it. But when we're talking about things that are like God's divine laws, and God's divine settings and his requirements for things, they're not random and they're not mine. I can change them, sure, in the sense that I can change how they're done. I can change whether or not I'm going to follow them or not. But ultimately, I'm not actually able to change them from being requirements, from them being beneficial, from them being helpful. You know, if I were to start like running up and down the sidewalk here with a super soaker and like just spraying people with water and yelling that I baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, have I technically baptized them? I mean, possibly, but not really.
Yeah.
Like it's baptism isn't mine. And so the fact that there is a setup and that there is like understandings that are sought, the fact that there are permissions that are to be given and things like that as part of it, like that's not up to me to decide. And so it becomes a question of, am I baptizing them for Christ or am I baptizing them into me? Because if I'm baptizing them into me, then yeah, absolutely, cool. I can go ahead and do this however I want. But how I want to do things is not a guarantee of relationship with Christ. Mm-hmm. How Christ wants things done, those are a guarantee of relationship with Christ. Because again, that was his whole goal too, was for us to have those. And so I think that's the danger for us when it comes to this idea of compromise, is that I at least have a huge tendency to assume a lot of things are my job and my responsibility and my decision to make that probably aren't. And so I've been quoting C.S. Lewis quite a bit. Now I'm going to go to G.K. Chesterton, my other favorite Brit who goes by initials. And G.K. talked about the idea it's only a truly great fool who removes a fence without first knowing why it was built. And so if I'm going to make any changes in aspects of worship and of ministry and of following Christ, if I'm going to make any changes in those, I had better have invested the time to be certain that they are the things that have been entrusted to me, like to my decision making and to my authority, and not like just going contrary to Christ's authority on it.
Yeah. It's interesting. You were saying something about the, I forgot your exact words, but it made me think of, the things that like you don't own them. They're Christ's. And I'm reading in Isaiah right now, and it's interesting. He's talking about how, you know, I'm in just like the very first chapter, and he kind of lays out how, you know, like you were good, now you're bad. And then like there's just like one line, and that's all that's spent on it. It just says, if you repent, I will make you all of these things. And then he goes through a list of all the things that he's going to do. And I was like, it really hit me. I was like, the only thing required of me is this internal change of repentance, right? Turning back to God. And then God does the rest, you know? And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And so kind of reconciling the orthodoxy, orthopraxy, and the ordered life is like our orthodoxy and forms our orthopraxy, right? Like our heart, the disposition of our heart is what like flows through into our behaviors, right? Definitely. And so we don't want, and we have a counterexample of that. So that's the Christian example. The counterexample is like Japan, right? Like, and if you've ever watched anime, right? Like there is some dark, crazy stuff where you're like, that is like from a humanistic perspective, like terrible content, like people should not, but they watch it like it's normal. Because if you go out into society, as long as you don't order three sugars in your coffee and you move through the line, like the order of society is maintained, right? They're very orthopractic. They're very concerned about the practice and your behavior in society, and they're less concerned about your heart and the disposition inside. That's why there is some like gnarly content in Japan. But when you go, everybody is very respectful, right? They kind of have an inverse culture to what the Christian culture is, where we don't force. I mean, we have lots of rules, don't get me wrong, but like the goal is for the heart to be transformed. And through that, your behavior is changed, right?
Kind of. But also like the other way as well. Like there is something to the idea, you know, why do you take little kids to church on Sunday when they don't know what's going on? Because by experiencing that prayer and experiencing those things, they learn it and it can become internalized. And so, no, I'm with you on the, I don't know anywhere near enough about Japanese culture, other than I can say, yes, I have definitely come across some really twisted stuff right. in like anime. But to be fair, Western culture has plenty of those things.
It does. Too. Oh, it does. Don't get me wrong.
Game of Thrones with like a word.
Yes.
But like, I think there is ultimately the reason orthodoxy is at the center is because it is. It's the center. Like our actions have to be informed by something. Now, right. whether those beliefs, though, are also reinforced and strengthened by our praxis, by our practices. You know, they. So, for example, and this goes back even to that idea of if I allow myself that slight slip in integrity, what am I doing? I'm turning away, and so I'm deadening myself, and I'm habituating myself away from these things that I claim I believe.
Correct.
And so that's where it can spiral.
So there's like, so I'm with you. The one thing I would say maybe is that it is like the word I really like is integrated. Integrated and ordered. meaning that it goes, you know, Christ to heart to behavior, and then it also follows back up that way, right? You change your behavior, you change your heart, you become disordered from Christ. And so it is integrated, but also ordered, right? Like it's not like circular or anything, like it's linear in that it follows kind of through these things. I mean, that's one example, because you could say, didn't change my behavior until I had a change in my heart, but...
Sure. No. But like, I think you're right. There's that idea of it isn't... So in teaching, we talk a lot about the idea of like spiraling skills. Mm-hmm. Like homework isn't just about practicing the things we did today, but homework is actually mostly about looking back at what we had done in previous units, keep that fresh.
Mm-hmm.
While in class, where the teacher is there to offer the feedback and the guidance and things like that, if a kid is confused, that's where you're really practicing the new material. And so I think there is that like spiraling aspect, like our behavior, our practice is going to either reinforce those things we believe,
mm-hmm.
or is going to weaken those things we believe.
Right.
But like, it's not, yeah.
Because you could have resisted the temptation, you know, like just because mm-hmm. the poison's in there, you didn't have to act on it. And if you had not acted on it, so it's kind of, so I guess that's actually, if I was going to pull a life lesson, that's probably what I would head towards is that integration is really that word, and really understanding how your behavior impacts your heart, and how, you know, I guess tying it back into the mission of Christ, I'm having a hard time, if I'm being honest with you, to the third temptation specifically on, you know, like governments and having these things. But it really boils down to, as you said, integrity, right? Being integrated and knowing that the choices that you make for your behavior impact your heart and your spirit, which is ordered towards Christ or not, right? So
yeah,
how many times have we said, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore? You break a promise to yourself, you do these things, you break promises to God, like all of these things happen to the point till eventually you feel alone, you feel isolated, and that's because your behavior, you lost your integrity. And that integrity is what keeps you aligned with Christ.
Yeah. And I think for me, kind of bringing it back into the third temptation a little bit, that idea of, you know, recognizing whose authority is being discussed. You know, that idea of, because compromise is an important thing. Like I need to be able to compromise on things that can be compromised. But I got to know which is which. And so I have to know whose authority does this decision fall under. If it's under my human authority, then I can, with integrity, I can make some compromises here. Like, you know what? I know I said you needed to eat all your dinner, but I have seen you're putting the effort in, and like, quite frankly, I want to go to bed before 11 o'clock tonight, and I'm not 100% certain I can out-stubborn you, so here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, take these three bites. That's your parental authority. You are absolutely in the right to be able to make that compromise. God has not decreed your child must clear all the food off of their plate.
Mm-hmm.
That was a parental decision, and so as the parent, you have the authority to change it. But, you know, taking it to like my classroom setting where I'm talking about vocations and things like that with juniors in high school. And we're talking about the idea of marriage and what the requirements are. There are things that I can tell them are compromisable. There are some things in terms of like, you know, how long does a couple need to know each other, or how many prep classes do they need to go through and things like that, blah, blah, blah. Those are human things that were put in place to try, you know, for good reason. Mm-hmm. They were put there for good reason, but they were human decisions. Where can I not compromise, even if it would make the classroom discussion a lot tamer and a lot easier, and probably make some of the things I'm saying more appealing to some of my students? No. Like, it does say one man, one woman.
Mm-hmm.
It does say, till death do us part, for better or worse, sickness and health. You know, like it says those things. Like those aren't, Jesus says, what God has brought together, no man can separate. Like I'm going to have the conversations with you with full compassion, with full love, recognizing the brokenness of our world, recognizing the brokenness of the human person and all of these different things that factor in. Absolutely, with 100% compassion, I will talk to you about that. But I cannot compromise God's teachings on it and claim with any integrity that I'm handing on to you God's teachings. Because like that's my job. My job is to hand them on, to explain them to the best of my ability, but ultimately to hand them on. And so, yeah, that idea of having an awareness of what is and isn't under my authority so that I can, with integrity, live out the mission that God has given me. And so that I don't have to worry about whether I have compromised the truth for the sake of numbers.
That's good stuff. I haven't thought about that temptation much, and so I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of it, but that's good.
No worries, man. Like it is one of those ones where, like, you know, that is the third temptation is the one that is far and away, like, when you read it at first, at least, the most kind of, well, that's above my pay grade.
Yeah. Like, or it seems just like it's like, you know, like when people's like, I've got one, and then I've got two, and you're like, no, you need to come up with a third thing because everything's done in thirds. So Christ is like, say, no, tempt me one more time because it needs to be in threes, okay? Like, it's redundant. I get it. You're not smart. It's over. But like, I need a third one, or it's gonna bug me for days. Okay.
Oh my gosh, I love that mental image.
Oh crap. Oh well. Hopefully, I don't get in trouble for that one. Anyway, got anything else on your brain there, man?
Nah, man, I'm good.
Right on, right on. With that, everybody, we will say
adieu.